The Mutual Network and its affiliated stations from coast to coast now present a special address by the Honorable Joseph R. McCarthy, United States Senator from Wisconsin. Senator McCarthy is speaking tonight before more than 1,500 members of the Irish Fellowship Club of Chicago at the 53rd annual meeting in the Grand Ballroom of the Palmer House in downtown Chicago.
As I have said so often before, it's good, very good, every once in a while to get out of Washington temporarily and get back into the United States. You know, after it was announced that I was leaving Washington to come out here tonight, to be here in Washington, or in Chicago tomorrow noon, Milwaukee the following night to answer my good friend Adlai, Oklahoma City the following night, as you may have read in the paper, a number of my good friends in the Senate objected strenuously and said, McCarthy, you should stay in Washington. It's one of the nicest things that ever happened to me. It's the first time I really realized how much I was appreciated down there and how deep the affection for me was. Now, there are many things which we might well talk about tonight. We could review the history of the Irish race on this St. Patrick's Day and discuss how much they have contributed to the civilization of the world. We could review the glorious history of different men of the Irish race who have led the struggle in almost all corners of the earth for freedom and decency. We could review the history of why George Washington selected the two words St. Patrick as the password for his army in those dark days. We could even review the history of St. Patrick's driving the snakes from Ireland and perhaps go into some detail as to why the snakes didn't like his method. However, it seemed, as we meet here in St. Patrick's Day, celebrating, honoring the memory of a great man who freed the minds of the Irish race from paganism, it might be well for us to, tonight, very briefly discuss a struggle which we are in tonight, a struggle by a brutalitarian power to enslave not only the minds, but also the bodies of all of the peoples of the world. With your permission, I would like to do that tonight. Now, I know, I've been told that perhaps the sizable majority of my audience here in this Irish Fellowship Club are Democrats. So tonight I'm going to address... Tonight I am going to ignore the few Republicans in the audience and address my remarks principally to my Democrat friends. May I do that? As I've often said in the past, ladies and gentlemen, this war in which we're now engaged cannot be a war between America's two great political parties. As I've often said in the past, certainly the millions of loyal Americans have long voted the Democrat ticket, love America just as much, they hate communism just as much as the average Republican. I'm not going to discuss politics tonight. I am going to discuss this war in which we've been engaged for 105 years. And as I discuss it, I wish you'd keep in mind that when a minister, when a rabbi, when a priest gets up and discusses atheistic communism, no one can accuse him of discussing politics. There is no politics in this, my good friends. At least there shouldn't be. As we go over a few of the facts tonight, let's keep in mind that we are at war tonight on this 17th day of March, 1954. A war that has been going on for 106 years. a war declared by Karl Marx in 1848, redeclared and brought down to date by Lenin, again redeclared by Stalin, and again redeclared by the Kremlin within the last 5 or 6 weeks. Keep in mind also, my good friends, that as of tonight, we are not winning this war. Keep in mind that 106 years ago, when this war was declared, you could number the active communists on the fingers of both your hands. 97 years later, in 1945, you couldn't number them on the fingers of both your hands. The number then was 180 million human souls. As of tonight, the 17th day of March, 1954, just 8 years later, the figure is not 180 million. As of tonight, the figure is 800 million people. 800 million people in communist slavery. My good friends, no brutalitarian force has ever achieved that success before in the history of this world. Christianity in 2,000 years has not been that successful. Let's keep in mind, my good friends, that this is something not far from you, the people in this audience here tonight. Now, let's get down, if we may, to what we're doing about it today. As you know, some of us in Washington who have been sent down there, men like that grand old man of the Senate, the great Democrat Pat McCarran, men like Bill Jenner and others have been trying to slowly dig out and expose to the public view those who would destroy this nation. Now you will see, you are seeing today, an all-out attempt to marshal the forces of the opposition, using not merely the communists, but the fellow travelers, the deluded liberals, the eggheads, and some of my good friends in both the Democrat and Republican Party, who can become heroes overnight in the eyes of the left-wing press if they will join with the jackal pack. Now, what you will find is the all-out attempt to try and curb the powers of the investigating committee. Change the rules, if you please. Make it tougher to investigate communists than it is to expose crooks and dishonest. When you hear this clamor, as you're hearing it today, ask yourself this question. Why should it be more difficult? Why should it be made more difficult? Why should the rules be different in exposing treason and exposing crooked? One of the things that you'll hear a great clamor about, of course, is the so-called one-man committees. I'd like to just take a minute of your time to give you the background of why we have one-man committees in the Senate. There was a man accused of communist activities from my city of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. He was before a Senate committee, or a House committee, I beg your pardon. He was later convicted. The conviction was set aside on the ground that it hadn't been proven. At all times, while he was testifying, there was more than half of the members of the committee present. Thereafter, the rules of the House and the Senate were changed, so we have provided that one man constitutes a quorum, so that no communist in the future can get out of jail because we can't prove that over half the senators were there. I would like to tonight, if you don't mind, I would like to give you the names of some of the individuals who have appeared before our one-man committee. And keep in mind, when you talk about a one-man committee, as far as my committee is concerned, we've never held a single hearing which was objected to by a single senator on the committee. I have always invited all of them to appear. The fact that they did not appear with me does not reflect upon them, because many days in the Senate you have as many as 40, 50, 60 committees and subcommittees sitting, so that it's impossible for all those senators to simply speak. Let's examine this. Just what has happened to some people who have appeared before this one-man committee. I would like to just pick at random the names of 20, if I may. Let me tell you what happened to those 20. All of them, the time they appeared before our committee, the time they were subpoenaed, let me say, the time they were ordered to appear, they were either working for the government or they were working in defense plants which were handling secret and top secret work. All of them, after they appeared before the committee, were either fired or suspended. Let's run through the names. W. Powell, Robert Goodwin, Edward Rothschild, Nathaniel Mills, Henry Archdeacon, Donald Morrill, Wittelod Pierkarski, R. Levine, Alexander Gregory, Theodore Pappas, Victor Bowles, Irving Perez, that name I imagine is familiar, Sidney Friedlander, Robert Northrop, Arthur Owens, Joseph Gebhardt, Emmanuel Fernandez, Gordon Belgrave, Dewey Bashir, Leo Kantrowitz. I just picked those at random, my good friends, to give you an idea of some of the people who would still be in government tonight or in defense plans if the left-wingers had their way, if they could not have been dug out before the so-called one-man committee. Now, in fairness to the other senators, I'd like to have it clear that I'm not criticizing them for not appearing on the committee. We've been working night and day, holding night hearings, my staff working almost around the clock. I can't ask the other senators who have other work to work nights with me. I don't expect them to. But I wish you would keep this in mind. If you hear any senator on the committee saying, now let's have a rule that hearings can't be held unless you've got two senators or three senators, keep in mind that he doesn't need a rule. All he needs to do is appear and sit on the committee. Very easy to take care of. Now, we could also go into those who are being cited for contempt as a result of these hearings, but I think we won't take your time on that. But I would like to do, if I may, your time is short, I know. I would like to read to you very briefly from a document, and you try and guess what this is as I read from it, will you? You try and guess what this is reading from. Page 15. So we must take part in any fights between Eisenhower and McCarthy. I'm not quoting this verbatim, I'm paraphrasing it because it's too long to read. We have been derelict in our duty in not having taken part in those fights. Now I quote verbatim. We must direct the sharpest fire on any given issue against McCarthy, but we must be careful not to appear to support Eisenhower either. In other words, you get the idea? We must enter the fight. We must damn hell out of McCarthy, but be careful, don't praise Ike. In other words, they don't like Ike either. Then they define the method of the fight against the committees digging out communists. They say, refer to it as a struggle against witch-hunting investigations of the McCarthy-McCarran type of congressional committee. Defend the victims of McCarthyism. Then, in addition, there is the important direct attack upon McCarthy himself. And then they give one of the three aims, let me quote, to elect an anti-McCarthy Congress by defeating every McCarthy-McCarranite candidate, especially singling out for defeat those who are incumbents, and by electing a powerful block of conscious and determined fighters against McCarthyism. See, they're very nonpartisan. They say defeat the McCarran type of Democrat, the McCarthy type of Republican. Who do you think said this? September 1953, the main report delivered at the National Conference of the Communist Party of the United States of America. That's the party line. Who set this party line? According to this communist booklet, it's Mr. Andrew Stevens. Well, I would like to tell you tonight, ladies and gentlemen, that there is no Andrew Stevens. There is no Andrew Stevens. Now I'd like to challenge that communist party, which sets down the line to be followed by all communists throughout the United States. I would like to challenge them to tell us who this secret communist is, who is so high in the party that he can set the line for the National Conference of the Communist Party 1953. Of course, they won't do that. I might say the American people would be very, very much surprised, I'm sure, if you knew the identity of Andrew Stevens. Just keep that in mind as you hear the screaming of the bleeding hearts. Keep in mind the order of the party. Here's their line. They say, get into every fight. Any fight you can stir up between McCarthy and the administration, get into it. Be as rough as you can on McCarthy, but be sure you don't praise Ike. We've got to take care of him later. And I may say I'm going to send a copy of this to my good friend, Mr. Eisenhower, so he will know that the Communist Party has linked us as one. I would like to, if I may, at this time, read to you the testimony of two military men. The first one, one of the finest young men who's ever appeared before our committee, the Sergeant Hoynell, a man I think who represents the courage and the fighting heart of at least 99% of our military. The second, a man directly opposite type of individual who represents the rotten apples in the barrel. Still too many of them. Let me quote from the sworn testimony of both these men. Sergeant Wynell was before the committee. He was testifying as to what occurred in Korea. He said, we fought our way into Taijiang. We ran out of ammunition. We were captured, 60 of us. 14 days later, the number was not 60, the number was 42. During those 14 days, 18 of the sons of American mothers, my good friends, died because of mistreatment, lack of food, lack of medical care. The day that he appeared before the committee, a few weeks ago, the number was not 42. On that day, the number was 1. He testified as to how, on this 14th night, the communists came in. First, they took out the South Koreans. He told about how after they would wire their hands together, and take them out of the prisoner shack, they would hear volleys of fire. They knew they were being murdered. He said, then it became our turn. And he said, those of us who couldn't walk were carried out and thrown in the ditch and machine gunned from behind. He said, finally, it came my turn. He said, my hands were wired behind my back. He said, here, Sanders, are the scars on my wrists. He said, we were marched out. He said, the machine gunned us. He said, I fell forward into the mud of that communist slaughterhouse. And I was dragged down by one of my friends who was wired to my left hand, my left arm. Another GI fell across my feet. He said, then they covered us up with mud. Luckily, he said, there was only about a foot of it. So 52 hours later, when the Americans overran the position, I was still living. He said, one other GI was living. He died 2 hours later. And here's what he said. He said, the thing that made me proud to be an American was the fact that not a single one of those 41 friends of mine cracked. Not a single one begged for mercy. Not a single one offered to join with the communists. And then a few weeks later, we have Major Perez. And here's the man about whom there's been all the tumult and the shouting. We had him before. Let me give you the history of this man very briefly, if I may. I think it's very important to remember this over the next few weeks. This man, Perez, in April of 1953, was named by one of our intelligence agencies in a report they gave to the military, named not merely as a communist, but named as a graduate of the Communist Leadership School. This was in April. In August, he was given a questionnaire, asked whether those facts were true or not. The answer, thumbed his nose, wrote across the face of it, I refuse to answer Fifth Amendment. Well, can you hear me in the back of the room all right? Good. Then in November, and remember this sequence of dates, if you will. in November, promoted and made major. We called the matter to the attention of the military. I said, now, gentlemen, we can't waste our time digging out every communist we find and forcing him out by exposing him to public view. We said, you go ahead and get rid of him. I said, if there's a new team, if you intend to clean house, here's a sample case. We let you alone for a while. Let's see what you do with this case. Well, nothing happened. On January 4th, my chief counsel, Roy Cohn, again gave them a complete memorandum on this case. Finally, on January 26th, we called this man before us, said, Mr. Perez, are you a communist? Answer, I refuse to answer on the ground. My answer might tend to incriminate me. Question, are you a graduate of a communist leadership school? Again, I refuse to answer on the grounds of self-incrimination. Question, have you organized a communist cell down at Camp Kilmer? Answer, I refuse to answer on the grounds of self-incrimination. On down the line, I wrote to the Secretary of the Army. Apparently that was an inexcusable thing to do. Wrote to the Secretary of the Army and said, now, Mr. Secretary, here's a chance to prove to all of the 2 million people in the Army, prove to the 99% of the military who are good, loyal, outstanding Americans, that you won't countenance any rotten apples in the barrel, that you won't countenance any cover-up. I said, court-martial this man. Court-martial everyone. Would anything to do with his promotion? Well, I forgot to mention that he had been due to go overseas, and he applied to stay in this country because he said his wife and daughter had been visiting a psychiatrist. He couldn't remember the name of the psychiatrist, so he sent back to a posh job. So I said, now let's find out who gave him that posh assignment. Court martial, anyone who favored this man knowing that he was a communist. What happened? That letter became public on February 1st. The morning of February 2nd, he got an honorable discharge. Well, as I said to one of my friends over in the Pentagon, I do have some there yet. I said, now, if this is to be the pattern, if you will give an honorable discharge to every man who says he's a communist, then I can just simply tell all those young men who write to me, tell me that they've got a sick wife, they've got a sick family, they're needed at home. I can just write back and tell them to join the Communist Party. They'll get an honorable discharge. Now, in this connection, let me make it very clear that I don't blame the Secretary of the Army, Bob Stevens, for this fantastic situation. I think Bob is one of the finest men I know. He came to Washington very innocent, successful businessman, just too nice and too naive to cope with the Pentagon politicians. Now, who it is in the Pentagon who is so deathly afraid of our exposure of communists, I don't know. I know somebody is giving Bob Stevens very bad advice. My good friend said, McCarthy, why are you spending your time in a fight with the Secretary of the Army? Why don't you continue this exposure of communists? Let me make it very clear to them that I didn't choose to enter any contest with the Secretary of the Army. All we were doing was exposing Fifth Amendment communists, assuming they would be gotten rid of. And all of a sudden, all hell broke loose. We didn't make public the memorandum from our files showing the attempt to try and force us out of this investigation by threats that they would embarrass us by making charges against my chief counsel. I didn't make those public until they made their fantastic charges public. I didn't start the fight, but I think maybe I will have to finish it. There's only one Communist Party. The Communist Party that puts out this pamphlet setting the line for the communists in the United States is the same Communist Party as the one that tells Fifth Amendment communists how they should testify. It's the same Communist Party, if you please, that ordered American boys have their hands wired behind their backs and their brains blown out with communist machine guns. It's one and the same party, my good friend. Now, there are those who say, well, it's all right to dig them out, but, oh, we don't like your men. Well, my good friends, up to this date, up to this very moment. None of those who have said they don't like the methods have told us any other method they could use that would be effective. And when you hear them crying that they don't like the method, I suggest that you ask them when and where they ever exposed a communist by their method. When they say, you don't treat them like gentlemen, I'd like to ask them to take the 20 whom I've named to you. You say, don't give us general statements, my good friend. Say, pick out one of those cases and tell us where we ever mistreated any of those innocent communists. You know, it's so easy to make those general statements. And when they say you don't treat them like gentlemen, while we do, I might say that if we did not, I would not cry for them. Traitors are not gentlemen, my good friends. They don't understand being treated like gentlemen. May I say to you, my good friends, tonight, to the American people, that I don't care. I don't give a tinker's dang how high or how low, people in either the Republican or Democrat party, either party, are unhappy about our methods. This fight is going to go on as long as I am in the United States Senate. I've often been asked by some of my friends why I continue this contest, and at times the odds seem very high against you. About 20 years ago, well, more than that, 25 years ago, I was a chicken farmer back in Wisconsin. Since then, I have been given, I think, the highest honor that the people of a nation can give any man, namely the job of representing them in the United States Senate. This nation, this country has been very good to me. I am extremely lucky also in that I have a wife who is interested in this fight and is willing to take all the abuse also. And I may say that the only way that I can repay my nation, the only way that I can keep faith with the people who have given me that high honor of manning the watchtowers of this nation, is to continue this fight, regardless of how deep the scars may be, regardless of how rough the fight may get. I know that you, the members of the Irish Fellowship Club of Chicago, will believe me when I tell you that this fight is not going to stop.
A special address by the Honorable Joseph R. McCarthy, United States Senator from Wisconsin, speaking tonight before more than 1,500 members of the Irish Fellowship Club of Chicago at their 53rd annual meeting at the Grand Ballroom of the Palmer House in downtown Chicago.
This is the Mutual Don Lee Broadcasting System. KHJ, the Don Lee Station in Los Angeles.